This is Radio Catskill.
Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. As I was walking in my garden, I was overcome with the shapes and the smells, the sweet fragrance, the dimension, and the conversation I had with Murmur Blakesley. Then I noticed that the Garden Conservancy is having a workshop, Digging Deeper Plants, Place, and Structure, a collaborative Catskills Garden in Livingston Manor, New York, on August 1st. And Murmur is one of the hosts of this workshop. I welcome you to join Murmur for this episode as we walk through her garden. Gardener, writer, skier, Murmur Blakesley has published two novels, Same Blood and In Dark Water, and is currently working on her third novel. Her nonfiction book is A Conversation with Fear. Murmur is a member of the Professional Ski Instructors of America, an elite team that leads the development of ski teaching in the United States and represents American skiing globally. Murmur's home mountain is in Windham, New York, in the Catskills, where she lives and gardens. I have had the good fortune to watch and delight and participate in Murmur's constantly evolving garden over the years and be immersed in its beauty and the mystery of becoming absorbed in it. Gardening has been a part of human cultivation for at least 4,000 years and dates back to the Egyptian tomb paintings of 1500 BC. Murmur Blakesley's garden has been published in Garden Design magazine. Please join us as we walk through Murmur's garden. I am in the garden of Murmur Blakesley. We're here. She's going to walk me through it. This garden is located in Delaware County on the edge of Sullivan County, just outside of Beaverkill, New York, equidistant from Livingston Manor and Roscoe, New York in Sullivan County, and also Downsville, which is located in Delaware County, New York. The Catskill State Park surrounds us. It's a gorgeous summer day. It is 10 o'clock in the morning. Murmur, thank you so much for inviting me to talk about your garden. And you said we're going to start where?
We're starting where the garden began, which I'll take you right over to that place, the rockiest place here.
And Murmur, when was this?
Back in 1990, it started, and I didn't know anything about plants, really. I knew very, very little, but I decided that it should start right here by the stream bed and this tree, that was sort of an anchor. I didn't know the word anchor or anything like that. I just wanted to bring it into the lawn, which was just a square old lawn cut out of the woods, and I didn't like that square old lawn thing. I started here, and I worked all day long, and then Eric came home at the end of the day and said, gee, that was the edge of the vegetable garden, and we threw rocks there for 20 years. So that's why it's the rockiest place of the garden. So this is where the garden started. And the garden kind of works off of what is here. It works off a dry stream bed and that large rock in the woods.
Behind that large rock, then, are thousands of acres, right?
Of forest, yeah. In the deciduous forest. And right away, I didn't know very much when I started, but I knew that I didn't want to cover the garden with evergreens, even though a lot of the predominant literature at the time was evergreens for structure. But I felt that a lot of evergreens made it very stiff and separate from the deciduous forests around. So I was trying to get structure in another way, really through the stonescaping that's been done, all the stone, which is very natural to this place because there are a lot of old stone walls. So it's just an adding more stone, and through working really with the flow of the land that's here.
So Murmur, what led you to this rocky corner of your garden in 1990 to begin? What did you think making a garden would be? Why were you doing it? And I'm curious, as we look at your garden right now that is moving through the edge of the woods and around your old farmhouse here, there's
a barn where you keep your horses adjacent to the garden. I hear a stream in the background. And I'm just curious how this evolved, because I'm looking at an unbelievable array of shapes, of textures, of colors, of a juxtaposition of, when I look at this, I'm immediately filled with an idea of beauty and somehow becoming lost in this language that I'm looking at of these plants. And then, of course, I look to you who's created this. So I have many questions about what this process is, and do you have any kinds of hopes with it as you're creating it?
Well, first of all, let me say I didn't think anything. There's no thought. It's like falling in love. Alan Lacy, who's a great garden writer, he said that a gardener becomes a gardener instantly through the process, what he calls the gardener's eye. You might not start your garden then, but you develop, in a moment of revelation, you have a gardener's eye. And that happened to me. And it happened not on this property where I was living my first home. My mom gave me 6 leftover red geraniums from her window boxes. And she had them left over and she brought them up to my house. And I put 3 by each side of the door, right outside the porch, right in the ground. And I couldn't have loved that garden more. The 6 red geraniums, it was just the end for me. That was,
or the beginning.
The beginning. The end of my life as I knew it and the beginning of this life. I wasn't able to garden then. I was a single mom. I was on food stamps. I was struggling. I was could barely do my laundry. So then when I got here, I had another experience where I felt, actually, I put a pitchfork into the ground and I felt energy come right up to me. I sat down and I went, oh, damn, I'm hooked. I mean, this something just happened. And I'm not a very sensitive or subtle person. So it was a powerful experience. The garden made itself, in a sense. I'm just its employee. There is nothing that I don't consider it any of my part of my personal expression. I pick plants that I like. So in that sense, it's a tremendous engagement with plants and with the land. So I'm not saying I'm a passive part of this relationship. But to me, a garden is just an intense engagement with the place and with the land. And I sometimes feel that myself ends at the edge of the garden. That's where the boundaries of my identity are.
So that is so interesting to me, Murmur. So you're talking about the fact that you feel that this garden is not an expression of yourself, and yet you're completely intertwined with it, even sharing with us that you sometimes think that when you get to the edge of the garden, you'll also end. There's a certain cessation then of a part of who you are, right? So explain this to me, because that's a very interesting layering, I think, of both your engagement and somehow losing yourself. So feeling that you're not thinking, but somehow there's something happening with this location and the land and the plants. But at the same time, of course, you're leading this, aren't you? You're making decisions. Yeah. You're creating. I mean, when I look at this, this is very unique to you. I've never seen a garden like this anywhere else. It's exquisite and has so many different colors, shapes, sizes flow through this land, and also an experience I have when I walk through it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It is a lot of work. The idea of a low maintenance garden is the last thing I want. The best analogy, I think, is with any kind of long-term relationship. When you think of a long-term relationship, you don't say, well, this is my personal expression, even though you're intimately engaged with it. You're an equal partner in it, but you're not thinking, oh, this relationship is just me. It's not. It's a part of you, yes, but it is equally the land giving back, the plants giving back. They do their own thing. One thing I learned very quickly in gardening is that every bed, I call it one garden. I don't say I have many gardens here. I say many beds, which I love the word bed because it brings out the sexual part of a garden. There are many beds, but one garden. And what I notice is that every bed wanted something different from me. I hated hostas when I started gardening. I hated rhododendrons. I hated tulips. I hated practically every flower I looked at. I couldn't stand daylilies. I couldn't stand anything. What I think happens in gardening is you just find yourself loving more and more plants. where the discrimination comes in is learning how to grow them, learning what they love, learning what they want, and also learning how to combine them so that they're happy in a community, but that each individual plant shines on its own. So I move plants endlessly around just to make them feel that they're being looked at.
I'm on a garden walk with Murmur Blakeslee in her garden in the Catskill Mountains of New York. So what is the relationship then between the viewer and the garden itself and these beds and perhaps the performance of it or the audience for a garden? Do you imagine it as a shared experience with yourself and other people or the garden and other people? I'm trying to explore, I think, the role of the garden and why so many of us are drawn into gardens and walking through them and what happens to our imaginations and our experience of the land and those kinds of things. So when you're working here, is it a solitary act or are you envisioning something else happening here?
It's a very quiet act that's not solitary because you are with each plant. I'm very, very connected to the plants. And sometimes I don't speak English when I am gardening.
Latin?
I speak Latin, right? But sometimes when someone talks to me while I'm gardening, I can't get out even a simple sentence like, let's go to the store. Because I am involved in a different language. The language of, I'm sure painters feel the same way, of form and color and also the science part of it, of pH and soil and drainage and all that. But I would garden if no one came here. If no one ever saw my garden, which very few people do in a way, I would still garden. It makes me feel sometimes quite selfish. But also flowers love to be looked at. So I love for my garden to be looked at because flowers love to be looked at. And sometimes I want to just like run off to my neighbor and say, come on up and look at the blooming Himalayan poppy. It's going to be blooming for about 45 seconds and I want people to see it. Otherwise they have to wait till next year. So it's a very solitary act in a way. If you're thinking of humans, if you're thinking of plants, you're an incredibly large and diverse community. When I first gardened, I thought a garden was something to look at. Like, you know, you see these blimps. I call them blimps. They're gardens in the middle of a lawn that gets viewed. And they look like it's a blimp that kind of landed on the lawn from outer space. But they're quite sweet because people are growing the flowers they love. I love every impulse of growing something you love. Shortly after I started gardening and I started visiting Wayne Winterode and Joe Eck up in North Hill, Vermont, their garden, which is a national treasure, I started to learn from some great gardeners like them too, but mostly they were my mentors. And I realized that a garden is something to be inside of, not to view at. And so that really started to change my way of gardening. And I realized when people came to visit, I would drag them uphill to see a flower. And then I thought, nah, that's not going to work because they really don't want to come. I have to bring the flowers to them. So I started to surround. You can't get out of it now. You have to see flowers when you come here. I wanted flowers in every place humans are. So that's why we created that terrace. I brought the flowers to the people who would come here instead of making them hike uphill. But I still, of course, force people to hike uphill. I try to give them a little wine first.
So we're at your very first garden bed where you began. Could you share with me some of the plants here and then let's take a walk through your garden?
The thing about gardening, okay, just so you know, is it's mostly about killing. Everybody thinks gardening is about giving, nurturing and all that stuff. But it's basically you kill hundreds of plants in a square foot of soil to plant your one plant. But then if you let it go a little wild like this has, you can see there are so many plants just in this little square foot here. Two kinds of euphorbias. There's a yellow leaf lemon balm, Melissa aurea. There's a Penicetum, a little annual grass. There's geranium. There's Nicotiana langsdorffii, which is a species. Nicotiana, you see how delicate it is? Mm-hmm. It's not a hybrid. It's got those long pendulous flowers with a lime green color. There's a lot of ground cover stuff. There's little spring forget-me-not self-seeding in here. There's some Heuchera, there's Lesbediza, there's geraniums, there's lilies, we haven't even moved yet, right? And I haven't even looked over there with the sensitive fern and the gentians, the fireweed that I brought in from the field up above, not knowing it was a terrible weed, but it's gorgeous. I love gorgeous weeds. So I keep pushing that back into the stone. One person in the garden tour said, "You're ballsy to bring that into your garden." I was like, how hard can it be? You know, it's a native. You can push back. There's an acanthus. That's a mistake. Acanthus is not supposed to grow here. It's zone 6 or 7. But I got it. It was mislabeled. I guess it's zone 4 or zone 5. Now with global warming, we're pretty much in zone 5. This is also not supposed to be hardy here. This is Crocosmia lucifer. Fabulous red, deep red plant. Anemone. There's a Polygonum polymorpha related to the Japanese knotweed. There's Filipendula blooming everywhere. Siberian catmint.
Can you take me to some of your favorite parts of the garden right now? I know it must change, of course, probably every day.
We talk about like corners of the week. Sometimes this makes corner of the week here, but that larch isn't doing so well, so we're not going to count that the corner of the week. This is one of my favorite gardens. This is a bed I did for Sally, my dead friend. She died, and I was driving home from Iowa City, and I realized that I needed to plant a garden for her. And I envisioned it back in this corner by the woods. It was just ferns and woods. And when I got home, that live tree was holding a dead tree. So I knew I had picked the right place. And I had imagined it all red and green with a little white thrown in. So this is Sally's bed. And then that tree died. So that's why I cut it off up, I don't know, is that 20 feet? 20 feet mm-hmm. up and sort of a dead tree sculpture there. So that goes up to the woods where it's just plain old ferns. That's a beautiful part of the garden. One thing I love about gardens is the permeability between the garden and the environment. And you see it in that ridge up there. You can see where does the garden end here? You really can't tell. There's the Japanese white pine there. It goes right up into that ridge. Where does the garden end up in the woods? You really can't tell because I've kind of edited up there and made it all ferns.
So, Murmur, speaking of editing, you're also a writer. You are a novelist. You also write nonfiction. You're also a ski expert. Is there a connection for you between those parts of your life as an artist, writing, and also being on the mountain slopes, working with people, and gardening?
Yes and no. I severely divide my personality. I have called myself, I'm 3 one-dimensional characters. When I'm gardening, that's all I talk about. When I'm writing, that's all I talk about. When I'm skiing, that's all I'm talking about. I'm 3 very boring people. But I'm 3 of them, so they're always fighting. They're always in angst. One's always not getting the attention she deserves. So in that sense, they're very different. The sense that they're the same is that I am hooked by each one of them. And I become in the service of either the story. I feel the same way with novels that I do about gardens. The story creates itself, and you start to learn about your characters that are living, breathing characters. And so I feel like there's always this outside agency that you're partaking in and with. There's this outside agency to both writing, just as it's more obvious in gardening, because the plants are certainly of their own.
I should also mention poetry, because you're also an
same
incredible...
Thing. Same okay. thing. There's a poem strike comes as a gift. It just feels like it comes as a gift. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not intensely engaged with it, and you start working, and your intellect is engaged. Every part of you is in the service of making that poem the best poem it can be. But it comes and tells you what it wants to be. Of course, you have to be available for it. I have to say that I'm not nearly as productive a person as before I gardened, started gardening. I used to be a productive person, but gardening took a lot of my time, takes a lot of my time.
This is Murmur reading one of her poems.
Pruning. Here we are again, the lilac and me dealing with age. I squat down in its center and clip each sprout suckering toward the light, knowing I'll lose a bit of bloom for the oldest, most gnarled trunks. Two large limbs rub against each other, both sweep heavily toward the ground. I've read of fungus which enters such unhealthy junctions. But the two have lived a long time together, shaping the tree around their bond, and I pass over them with my saw one more year in a gesture of recognition.
And you spoke about location. So What is it about this location where we are right now? What are the specifics of it for you?
That's a good question. First of all, I'll probably be here until I'm dead. Both Eric and I feel that way. This is our spot. I did not know the contours of this land. As I told you, it was a very square garden. I didn't like it at all. When I came here, I didn't like, a square yard. It's just a square yard. I really didn't appreciate the contours. The dry stream bed attracted me, but it was all brush. You couldn't see it. And so in a way, the garden has helped me see the flow into the woods. I like the change of terrain now, the hill. We're basically on a hill. I like the way the fields go through the valley, and then after the fields comes the woods. But when I first got here, I didn't respond that much to this part right here, the lawn, because it was dull. It was forgettable, as one of my friends said. The gravel driveway came right up in the back, so I wanted to separate where the vehicles were and say, this is a human part. Thanks very much. So now I adore this land. I love the fields. I love the swamp.
And now we're walking. I'm gesturing. Let's go over here because I'd like for you to share with us this part of your garden as well, which I'm very interested in, this combination of the wilds of it with the cultivation. And as you were addressing a little bit earlier in our conversation, the dark side of gardening, but really what it takes to...
Well, this part I wanted to penetrate, I would say, a long time ago, because I would come out here with my big black boots up to my knees, and I'd be in water. But the smell of forget-me-nots, the swamp perennial forget-me-nots, Myosotis palustris.
They're incredible, and they're light blue color floating here.
Yeah. And it was so beautiful that I said, Eric, we got to make a stone path out there, out through the bog to this tree right by the pasture.
And what kind of tree is that?
A yellow birch.
And we're standing next?
A willow, a weeping willow, one of my favorite trees. And
we're stepping over these beautiful big rocks right now going through the bog.
Oh, when Eric finished these, he did what he always does. He makes it look like it's always been here, right?
Yep. Yes.
He does that. He works with stone in a way that it looks either very old or almost zen-like, right? I hate to say that. It's such a cliche, but it's snaked through the bog. So I really love it out here. Then my mom's ashes are right there, and my dad's hair. He was buried, but I stole a little bit of his hair and put him there. So I always feel like the dead fertilize a garden. And that's certainly true in this place. This is my mom and dad section. I told you about Sally's bed. We have Joker's bed up there too, an old pony that used to wander at large here. And then all our cats are in our garden. We have dogs in our garden. We have horses out in the fields. We have a lot of dead animals here.
And Murmur, in your garden you have locations to sit. We've just arrived at two beautiful pale creamy yellow Adirondack chairs, but you have these spots throughout the garden as I'm being led. That's my experience, right? I'm being enticed, I'm being led, I'm being guided by the garden itself. What are these spots spots for and their connection to this garden you've created. It makes me think about time. And you're talking about also your mother and your father being here, your very close friend, the ashes, the memories, right? This kind of a passage of time, a contemplation of it perhaps that can happen here.
Well, a garden isn't, I told you before, I changed that way. I used to think it was just something to look at, flowers to look at. But then I started to realize it's about a place. The place wants a few flowers. Yeah, okay, the place wants a few flowers, a few plants, foliage. But you need a path. That's one thing Wayne Winterow taught me, is that the most important thing about a garden is a path through it. So you're in it. And then, of course, you need a seat or a destination or something. Now, so the chairs are mainly ideas of chairs. I don't usually sit in the garden very much, but except at the end of the day, we'd love to go sit someplace in the garden. And that's why the porch is still part of the garden. The house is part of the garden. The garden has really enveloped everything.
And this idea of the human beings, our experience in the garden, and these places to sit and to stop, is there a suggestion of contemplation or of slowing down or of memory or perhaps communication or sharing a shared experience?
Many things. One thing Plotinus said is, I think it was Plotinus, a mix of Plotinus and James Hillman, that beauty arrests you. So anything with beauty makes you stop, makes you go, and take in breath, inspire, right? That's the word, the root of the word, inspire. And it makes you, it draws your soul outward toward it. Ugliness makes you shrink in toward yourself. So it's, and contracts you. That terrible contracted me focus comes from ugliness. So anyway, to put chairs here, I'm inviting people to see the beauty that I saw when I came out here. And I said, if I put chairs here, people will come. Instead, they don't have to put on big black boots to get over here. They can go over the rocks. And so you're trying to create the beauty that you know is there. And I think all gardening is it's a big drag on our time. That's why low-maintenance gardening just doesn't even register. Would you want a low-maintenance relationship? Oh, yeah, I really like him or her. You know, it's going to be a real low-maintenance relationship. Whoopee. You know, so gardening is a very high devotion activity. And in that devotion, which you could call maintenance, is it pulls on your on the fast pace of time. It slows it down. So I think all gardening is a cure for our time disorder that we have in our culture. I think we're in a big time disorder.
Murmur, thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to share with me?
Slow down. We'll slow down together. The whole world has to slow down.
Thank you so much. I am speaking with Murmur Blakeslee in her garden in Colchester, New York. To find out more about Murmur Blakeslee, please go to www.murmurblakeslee.com. From the kitchen table out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artell. Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artell's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artell. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artell. Safe travels.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Feel like you're just spinning in an endless whirlpool of information? We can help steady you. I'm Brooke Gladstone, co-host of On the Media, and we point out where you should be paying attention and what you can afford to ignore. Using the media as puts a lens on our world. We reveal nuance and detail often missed by other outlets. So don't miss On the Media, Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This week in This American Life, 29 days after a local hospital closed its birthing unit, Katie went into labor. So that's not great, right? And then something else happened.
I said, Sasha, then get a chainsaw.